Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
Now, I know last week we had Dr. Niamh Shaw join me to talk about AMOC and the Gulf Stream, and we are returning to climate change now for a second, okay? Because RTE's Philip Boucher-Hayes has a remarkable new series. It's called Rising Tides, Ireland's Future in a Warmer World. It's on RTE One tonight at 9:35 p.m. And Philip joins me now to give us the good news.
Rain on your parade.
Good news.
You were having such fun on the programme this morning. It was almost entertaining for a change, Jennifer. People texting in to abuse you. And now Captain Shitecrack has turned up to make it miserable.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome, though. But it's not all doom and gloom, is it? Or is it?
There's good news. I'm more optimistic than I have ever been at 20 years of looking at this stuff. But I'm not going to tell you why until the end of this interview. How's that for a clip?
That's fine. Well, five more people will stay tuned then. That's great. Philip, why did you need to travel all across the world to understand how climate change will affect Ireland?
Because it's called global warming.
Gotcha.
In one. Because the whole climate change debate has become incredibly tedious and incredibly technical in this country, it's about lots of really boring things like carbon budgets, like marginal abatement cost curves, like sectoral ceiling emissions limits, yawn, 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 blah, blah, blah. And in that context, people don't really understand what is actually happening and how the rate of climate breakdown has accelerated really rapidly just in the course of the last 5 to 10 years alone. This isn't something that's distant now that we need to be thinking of in terms of something that might happen to our grandchildren or our great-grandchildren. In the lifetimes of pretty much everybody listening to this programme, serious stuff is going to unfold, is already unfolding. And it struck me that we don't understand fully the consequences of all of that. We're sitting here still doing a kind of a finger-pointing exercise saying, no, why me? Why do I have to do it? Let's make 2FM presenters do it. Let's make somebody else do it all. I shouldn't have to do anything. When the reality, the hard science of what is coming down the tracks at us, it suggests we all need to do absolutely everything that we can. But I think in our headspaces, post-lockdown, post-COVID, people are saying, well, do you know what? I've done my bit for everybody else. I'm not going to be doing any more of that right now. And I thought that if we made a documentary that allowed people to see for themselves, sorry, a series of documentaries, that it would allow people to see for themselves that it's no longer that you have to sit and listen to a clever person in a white coat explaining graphs and curves and so on to you. Now, unfortunately, climate change has gotten to the point that it can be seen by a television camera. All of the different places that we went to, if I had gone there 20 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to show you as dramatic images as we managed to gather. Now, because it's all really happening, you get to see it, feel it, touch it, understand it in a way that you wouldn't do with just Philip Boucher-Hayes, Captain Shitecrack, sitting in your studio.
Well, you're notorious for having a heart made of stone.
Where'd you get that? Who wrote that for you?
Was this an emotional trip for you?
Yes,
because you said this was 20 years that you've been talking to people about this and the experts. Now you get to see it with your own eyes. How did you feel when you were making it?
There's understanding and there's feeling. And I understood the science. I had talked to all of these scientists. But when you stand on one of those glaciers in Greenland, that in your mind's eye, what colour is a glacier?
I don't know. See-through? White? I don't know.
Yeah. Pristine white. All those kind of David Attenborough documentaries would have told you that anything in north of the Arctic Circle is a pristine white kind of colour. You land on these things, they're the colour of concrete. And the reason that they're the colour of concrete is that the snow falling down onto the glaciers is picking up the carbon that we are burning in the northern hemisphere and all of the other pollutants in the air. And it's changing the colour of the glaciers, which has consequence because something that's white reflects a huge amount of the sun's heat back out into space. Something that is dark absorbs a huge amount. Basically, it's now absorbing 70% of of the sun's radiation instead of reflecting 77% back. And that accelerates the process of melting the glaciers, as does all of the rain that's falling on the glaciers instead of snow, as does the warmer waters that are eroding the glaciers from underneath. And when you stand on one of these things and you see all of these processes unfolding...
So the ice is filthy.
The ice is filthy, and the ice is also shrinking in places by as much as 300 metres a year. It's dropping, it's melting that fast. And you look out to sea and you look in the direction of Ireland and you say, this
That's
is coming
us.
To us.
Mm. You said if we had gone there a few years ago, we wouldn't have seen the extent and the, you know, the acceleration. Back then, why now? What have we done? Like, what's happened?
I mean, look,
recently?
A large part of it as well is that we've ignored this stuff. One of the reasons that we went to Malawi in East Africa was back this time last year there was a storm,
a cyclone Freddy,
which was completely unreported by RTE or by any of the newspapers in this country. Nobody paid it any attention. This storm was the longest lasting storm in recorded meteorological history. 5 weeks this thing bounced around the Indian Ocean.
Okay.
First hit land as a Category 3 storm, went back out to sea, came back in again as a Category 5 cyclone, went back out to sea and came back in, and the meteorologists gave it a term which basically says it's off the charts in the amount of energy.
5 weeks.
5 weeks it did this. And when they calculated the energy in this storm, it was equal to an entire hurricane season in the North Atlantic. And the reason that it had so much energy in it is because the Indian Ocean is so much warmer. Why is it so much warmer? Blah, 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 blah. So we see the consequences of this in a way that we wouldn't have been able to see it before. And we in media are just doing a really bad job of communicating to people what is happening around the world, what are the processes that are unfolding, how serious this is and how long before it all ends up on our doorstep.
On our doorstep. What was the damage of that five-week cyclone?
Unreal. 5 weeks of constant rain ended up loosening up the ground. And in the second city of Malawi, Blantyre, the hills above really populated valleys just slid down into the valleys. And there's still now to this day, unfortunately, until the next rainy season and there's another landslide, there's some 500 or 600 people buried under them. And as we were filming, we were walking over what are essentially their graves. It was grim, very grim.
Okay, so that's what's visible. That's what, well, we don't know what's happening because it wasn't reported on. But there's also stuff like how serious is a threat of gas being released from the soil in the Arctic every day? That's something that we don't see and have to be told by scientists, right?
Big sleeping giant of a problem, except when we did go north of the Arctic Circle in Sweden, we could actually see this, which really surprised me. You've probably seen videos in places of people lighting lakes and lighting the methane that's bubbling up from underneath the lake. We didn't even have to do that. You just saw these little pools in bogs exactly the same as we have here, with bubbles just coming up to the surface, and that's carbon dioxide and methane as this layer of permafrost underneath the soil thaws out. Permafrost is frozen bog, basically. It has been frozen like this for millions and millions of years. And as it thaws, there's all of these little microbes in there that wake up from suspended animation and go, well, hey, look at all of this carbon, this peat around us. And they start eating it and they fart and they belch out carbon dioxide and methane. And that doesn't sound like the most damaging process, but consider that the permafrost forms a ring around the top of the globe. Go from Finland, Sweden, Norway into Siberia, across to Alaska, through northern Canada. That big ring around the top of the globe is all permafrost. And if you were to thaw out the top 3 meters of the permafrost, the carbon release from that is the same as burning every forest on the entire planet 3 times over. Now, that's just the top 3 meters of the permafrost. In places in Siberia, the permafrost goes to 1,400 metres in depth. And that's carbon that is at the moment locked in place in suspended animation, like I say, because it is frozen. But as it thaws, it's going to release all of that carbon. And the only way to stop it is to just stop heating the planet, stop pumping carbon into the air.
Hundreds of metres of our coastline will be under the sea within the next couple of hundred years. So what will the country look like?
There's a really kind of a simple piece of maths for this. For every metre that the sea levels rise, which by the end of the century, it's going to be at least a metre, probably more. For every metre that the water goes up, it will come in 100 metres. So we know now that no matter what we do, even if we cooled the planet rapidly tomorrow and we stopped burning carbon, there is still 5 metres of sea level rise on the way. That's just unfortunately going to happen no matter what the hell it is that we do. So do the maths yourself. Mm-hmm. 5 metres up, 500 metres in. Now, obviously, that's not going to be even because the coastline isn't even. You know, there will be cliffs that won't be inundated in the same way, though they will be eroded by bigger waves. But if you apply that right now to the map of Dublin, Cork, Limerick, in Dublin, all of those nice posh coastal villages from Monkstown, from Dorky, Killiney, right the way up to Sutton, gone. Dublin Bay will start here in Donnybrook. This would be a great way for the government to solve RTE's problems. RTE be underwater in a couple of centuries' time.
But that's already happened.
Ooh, political commentary as well.
Look, we're on it.
So Dublin Bay will start at Donnybrook on the south side and Drumcondra on the north side. Cork city centre, half the city centre will be gone. All of those outlying villages will be underwater as well. Limerick, much of the city centre gone. Thomond Park will be popping up out of the water, out of the new Shannon estuary, like a little island. Much of the rest of the city will be gone. The same kind of picture in Galway as well.
Okay, so tonight's episode, you go to Greenland. It's pretty grim. You're painting a picture. What is going on? There is some hope, and the episodes to follow, you do talk about what we can do, because I think when people are listening to this, they want to know, well, what can we do? But why do you argue against the idea that, you know, Ireland is so small that our behaviour will make no difference?
Because it's a really stupid piece of failure to do some kind of very basic maths. Yes, it's an appealing argument on the face of it. Ireland is so tiny. What difference can we make? You know, China and India should be doing these things first. If you look around the world, there's 193 countries. Half of them are the same size as Ireland in population terms or smaller. So half the countries of the world, if they were to do an Ireland and say, what difference can we possibly make? We're too small. That's a third of all global emissions, if all of those small countries were to say that. So I'm sorry, it's a dopey argument saying we're so small, what difference can we make? And that's, I suppose, where once again, just like lockdown, we all have to start thinking about acting in the collective good. That faced with something as monumental as climate change, you as an individual will say, well, what the hell can I do? The first thing you do is stop acting as an individual. When we act together, that's when we start to have a bit of an impact. Why am I optimistic? This is my wind-up.
Go on.
I've been, as I said, reporting in this area 20, 25 years now, and I've been like pretty despondent looking at the enormity of what has to be done an awful lot of the time. But we've actually finally, in political terms and in some corporations, moved through a threshold of action and understanding, and they now get it. You know, there is no greater disruptor to profits and to the bottom line of a business than climate change. So they're getting there, understanding that action needs to be taken. And if you were 10 years ago to have done an audit and said, how hot is it going to be by the end of the century? There would have been an additional 4 degrees of warming. an additional 4 degrees of warming is game over for humankind. I'm sorry. Yes, some people might just about survive, but it's the end of civilization completely. But what we have done on paper, we have yet to implement all of this, but what governments of the world have promised to do has brought us from, in just 8 years' time, has brought us from 4 degrees of additional warming to 2.7 degrees mm-hmm. of additional warming. Now, that's still a hellscape. Mm-hmm. You don't want to live in that world, believe you me, but it's a hell of a lot better than 4 degrees, and it shows that the direction of travel, still not moving fast enough, but that the direction of travel is finally heading in the right direction. We have woken up and realised it's never too late to stop punching yourself in the head.
I'm going to stop you there because that's
I was finished.
That's a positive thing you said. But if you want to know more, it's a really remarkable documentary. Go and check it out.
She says without having seen it.
No, I haven't seen it. I've been told. The first episode is on tonight.
Will you watch it?
I will.
Past your bedtime, probably.
I will, because I often hear that argument from people I know that we can't do anything. You know, China and America, they need to be stepping up. And if they're not going to do anything, we're screwed anyway. So this is, it's going to be interesting.
This is a rebuttal to that, because program one is going to be the slightly depressing one, because program one tells you exactly how screwed we are. Programs two and three tell you how we unscrew ourselves.
Okay. Well, we all need to hear that. It's called Rising Tides, Ireland's Future in a Warmer World. It is on RT1 tonight, 9:35 p.m.
Jem Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.